Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Text 31. No, he read at least part of this. We read this, 31. 32. 1 minute. Text 32. Ataprak pratipaditasya eva abhideyasya prayojanasya sastapakam jivasya swarupata eva parameshwarad vailakshanyam apashyad ityaha yayeti yaya mayaya sammohito jivak swayam chitrupatvena trigunatmakad jadat paropyatmanam trigunatmakam jadam dehadi sanghatam manute tanmananakritam anartam samsara vyasanam chabipadyate. Having defined the abhideya and prayojana. Okay, the class starts at 10 o'clock. Try to come on time. Having defined the abhideya and prayojana, now we can see how the verse beginning yaya sammohito jiva, quoted in 31, gives a firm foundation to these concepts. What's that banging? Gives a firm foundation to these concepts. It states that Vyasadeva saw the constitutional difference between the finite living entity, Jiva, and the Supreme Lord. It's outside, okay. The Jiva, completely bewildered by the external energy, Maya, thinks himself a material object, the complex of body, mind, and so on, a product of the three modes of nature. He thinks like this even though, by virtue of being a purely spiritual entity, he is in fact separate from everything, materially composed of the three modes. Because of thinking like this, he faces unwanted consequences, the troubles of material life. Okay. Jiva Goswami, in the beginning, showed that he wasn't interested in making this a polemic work arguing against Mayavadi philosophy. The interest is to show, to teach the message of the Bhagavatam, rather than get into arguments with impersonalists. But an important point has to be established here. The difference between the finite Jiva and the Supreme Soul, the Supreme Atma. The Jiva falls prey, if he's unfortunate, to the bewildering influence of Maya. The Supreme Lord, the Paramatma, never does. And he is the independent controller of the material energy. So there is going to be a diversion into argument against Mayavadi philosophy. For the next about 10 anuchedas.
Even though Jiva Goswami didn't want to have to do this, but he does. Okay. Continuing. Vakshyate cha vilajamanaya yasya statum iksha pate muya vimohita vikatante mamahamiti durdiyaha iti. Atra vilajamanaya ityanain edam ayati. Tasya jiva sammohanam karma Sri Bhagavate narochita ityadyapi sa swayam janati tatapi bayam dvitiya biniveshatak syad ishad apetasya iti disha jivanam anadi bhagavad jnanamaya vaimukhyam asahamana swarupa varanam asvarupa visham chakaroti. Srimad Bhagavatam later says, the illusory energy of the Lord cannot stand within his sight, being ashamed of her position. But those bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of, it is I and it is mine. From the words, feeling ashamed, Vilajamanaya, we understand that although Maya herself knows that her duty of bewildering the jivas is not pleasing to the Supreme Lord, she cannot tolerate the jivas' indifference to the Lord. They're ignoring him since time immemorial. Thus she covers their true identities and entangles them in false identities. As described in the verse, fear arises in anyone who turns away from the Supreme Lord and absorbs himself in other things. We skipped over one paragraph? Okay. Well, all right. Now let's try to clean this up. I'll read the last two sentences of 32.1. just to reorient us. Last two sentences of 32.1, then 32.2. I'll read just the translation. He thinks like this even though, by virtue of being a purely spiritual entity, he is in fact separate from everything materially composed of the three modes. Because of thinking like this, he faces unwanted consequences, the troubles of material life. Then 32.2. Tadevam jivasya chitsarupa tvaipi yaya sammohita iti manute iti cha sarupa buddha jnana shalitvam vyanakti prakasha aika rupasya tejasa svapara prakashana shaktivat agyanena vitam jnanam tena muhyanti jantavaha. Does everybody know where that's from? What chapter? 15? Fifth chapter, verse 15, okay, of the Bhagavad Gita. Iti Shri Gita Pyaha Tadevam Uparireva Jiva Tvam Tannasha Syaiva Moksha Tvam Iti Mat Antaram Parivitavan Atra Yaya Samohita Ityanena Tasya Eva Tatra Kartvitvam Bhagavatas tatro dasina tvam matam. As expressed by the words, bewildered by whom, and he thinks, those are the Sanskrit words, yaya samohito and manute. This shows that although the jiva as pure spirit is conscious, he also inherently possesses the quality of consciousness just as fire, although by nature pure illumination, possesses the power to illuminate both itself and other things. The Mayavadis say that the reality is just pure consciousness, without any separation, separate manifestation of the dualities of knower, knowledge, and known. There is no separate knower. There is no separate object of knowledge. There's no separate process of knowledge. There's just pure knowledge. What that pure knowledge is cannot be explained. Because knowledge as we know it involves that duality of somebody knowing something by some means of knowing. How can we have knowledge without those three factors? What is it? No one can say. So what we're setting up ourselves for here is to defeat this Mayavadi misconception of pure knowledge that doesn't have a knower and a known and a knowledge. Because the jiva, yes, he's pure spirit. There's a problem here. He's conscious. He has the quality of consciousness. That's the same saying the same thing. I think better to say he is consciousness and he possesses consciousness as a quality. Can I make a note of that? I want to rephrase this. Because the idea he's got a quality, I mean, he is consciousness is what the Upanishads tell us. Right? Yeah, he is consciousness, but I want to change then also. He has consciousness as his quality. Those two things. He is consciousness, but he has consciousness also. That's the point. The way I say it is not exactly making the point right. I'm sorry, I got to write this down. Okay. So I'm using this new version of Word, and I can't find out where to insert a comment. Oh, I see. Separate menu for it. Insert new comment. Okay, got it. Rather, he is consciousness and has consciousness as a quality. Okay, sorry for the further disruption here.
Prabhuji, just one small thing.
Go ahead. Yes.
Just in the Sanskrit there, I think yaya samohita, the samohita is in italics and the yaya is in
I have them both in italics. You have an older version.
Well, the first one's in italics, but then second line down.
I see, yeah, down the last sentence. Last sentence, it should also be italics.
Yeah.
Got it, fixed. Fixed. It won't be showing up wrong in the book. It's fixed. Okay. Let me read that sentence the way it's supposed to read. As expressed by the words, bewildered by whom, and, quote, he thinks, this shows that although the jiva as pure spirit is consciousness, he also inherently possesses consciousness as a quality, just as fire, although by nature pure illumination, possesses the power to illuminate both itself and other things. In other words, there is an inherent duality, and it's real. As Srimad Bhagavad Gita says, ignorance covers knowledge, and thus the living beings become bewildered. This statement refutes, well, that means that the living entities, Krishna's talking in those terms, he's talking in terms of the living entities having consciousness, not just being consciousness, but also having it, and apparently losing it also. This statement refutes the opposing theory that the jiva is only a temporary designation, upadhi, and that the annihilation of the jiva constitutes liberation. Yeah, actually, Mayavadi theory is not only that the jiva is pure consciousness, but that the jiva doesn't exist as a separate entity. The jiva is just the absolute truth covered by false identification. He's thinking he's the jiva, he's really God. I'm sorry, continuing. The phrase, bewildered by whom, yayasa mohito, expresses the idea that it is Maya alone who bewilders. The personality of Godhead does not participate. Okay, it's not his fault, living entity, not God's fault that the living entity is bewildered. It's not Maya's fault either. It's our own fault. Okay, I already read the Sanskrit, right? For 32.3, I'll read the English one more time. Srimad Bhagavatam later says, the illusory energy of the Lord cannot stand within his sight, being ashamed of her position. But those bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of it is I and it is mine. From the words feeling ashamed, we understand that although Maya herself knows that her duty of bewildering the jivas is not pleasing to the Supreme Lord, she cannot tolerate the jivas' indifference to the Lord, their ignoring him since time immemorial. Thus she covers their true identities and engages them in false identities, as described in the verse, fear arises in anyone who turns away from the Supreme Lord and absorbs himself in other things. Okay, now the commentary. Before aspiring Vaishnavas can begin to make substantial advancement in the Abhideya and Prayojana of spiritual life, in other words, before they can follow the regulative process of sadhana bhakti and gradually achieve the ecstatic perfection of prema bhakti, they must properly understand the difference between the Supreme Soul and the finite jiva souls. You have to understand the difference in order to make progress in devotional service. That much knowledge we have to have. We have to know that we're not God. We have to know what God is, and we have to know what we are in relationship to God. The Mayavadis never acknowledge this difference, and therefore they can never know the true Abhideya and Prayojana. Immature Vaishnavas who try to emulate pure love of God without having first assimilated Sambandha Jnana unfortunately become Prakriti Sahajas, materialistic imitators who turn the sublime process of sadhana bhakti into a travesty. We can appreciate the essential difference between God and the living entity in various ways. One is the master, and the other is a servant. One is infinite, and the other infinitesimal. In Vyasadeva's vision, we see the jiva bewildered by the Supreme Lord's maya. She has the power to make the jiva forget his spiritual nature and misidentify himself as master. The Lord, however, is ever free from Maya's influence. According to Shankaracharya's Advaita Vad, the real nature of the jiva is that he is pure consciousness. Shankara teaches that on the level of ultimate reality, not only do all dualities disappear, including the distinction between jiva-atma and paramatma, but also the separate existence of knower, known, and knowledge. Thus, according to Shankara, the pure self does not have knowledge and is not an object of knowledge. Rather, it is chinmatra, simply pure knowledge, without duality. The separate existence of the jiva is an illusion, an upadhi falsely superimposed on undifferentiated Brahman, which Shankara presents as the ultimate reality. To support this view, the Advaitavadis cite Upanishadic evidence. Yo vigyane tishtan vigyanad antaro yam vigyanam naveda yasya vigyanam shariram. He who stands within vigyana, who is different from vigyana, whom vigyana does not know, whose body is vigyana. That is from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Vigyana is, at least in the Taittiriya Upanishad, I presume also here, I've taken it out of context, but vigyana is the term indicating the finite jiva. There is the Vijnanamaya Purusha, the jiva, and then the Anandamaya Purusha, the Supreme Soul. So the Supreme Soul has a relationship with the finite soul, having a relationship means they're two separate things, two separate entities. Okay. Now, I say something about what the Mayavadis take that to mean. As interpreted by Mayavad impersonalists, this means that the pure consciousness of the self is transcendental to the specific consciousness, vijnana, of knower, known, and knowledge. So Mayavadis take this vijnana word here to mean dualistic knowledge that has a knower, a known, and a process of knowledge. The pure self, then, is the reality underlying all phenomena, and material consciousness is an upadhi imposed on it. When the pure self is reflected in the illusion of sattva, the material mode of goodness, the result is vijnana, material specific consciousness. Sattvat sanjayate jnanam. That's Krishna speaking in the Gita. Mayavadis are quoting him. From the mode of goodness, material consciousness arises. That's the Mayavadi translation. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan points out how the description of Vyasadeva's trance in Srimad Bhagavatam defeats such arguments of the Mayavadis. He asserts that the jivas are not mere shadows of the Supreme, but that their existence is real and separate. They are eternally conscious, living spirits, as confirmed by the words Paropi. In Srila Vyasadeva's trance, it is not the Supreme Soul who becomes transformed by Maya, but the consciousness of the Lord's rebellious servants. Prior to becoming deluded, the jivas existed as separate entities, and they will continue to exist separately even after their liberation. They are pure consciousness, and at the same time, they possess consciousness. This is possible in the same way as a lamp, functionally nothing but illumination, still illuminates itself and other objects. Vyasadeva's vision that the jivas become bewildered and think of themselves as material products establishes that the finite soul's consciousness is an innate quality that can never be removed from the soul, but that can be distorted by the influence of material illusion. Vaishnavacharyas faithfully elucidate the statements of the Upanishads and other scriptures in accordance with the overall intention of the Vedas. They do not violate or distort those statements by ignoring their context and unbefittingly interpreting their words. They simply explain that the pure self who, quote, stands within vijnana and who is different from vijnana is the Supreme Soul, the personality of Godhead, and that vijnana is regularly used, as it is in the Taittiriya Upanishad and other Vedic texts, as a term for the jiva soul. Thus they explain that the sentence beginning Yo Vijnani Tishtan is not speaking about the pure selves, transcending all consciousness of distinctions. Just the opposite, it speaks about the real distinction between the jivatma and paramatma, and about real knowledge of that distinction. Vaishnavacharyas go on to explain that the Bhagavad Gita's statement, knowledge arises from the mode of goodness, in context refers to the relatively less deluded condition of jivas who have risen to the highest mode of material influence. He's talking about, when Krishna says that, he's talking about, the chapter is chapter 14, he's talking about the three modes of material nature and their influence. Rather than to a supposed state before the creation in which material consciousness did not exist. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan expresses the opinion in his commentary to this Anuchit that first the jiva's consciousness becomes covered by envy of the Supreme Lord, and then is further covered by Maya when she places him in illusion. Baladeva likens this to the way a fire is covered by a pot, to the way a fire covered by a pot becomes further covered by darkness when the exhaustion of available oxygen extinguishes its flame. Similarly, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the seventh chapter of his Vaishnava novel, Jiva Dharma, depicts the process of the jiva's fall from his original spiritual life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Jivir dviti dasha spashta dika yai, mukta dasha o shamsara bodha dasha, shuddha krishna bhakta jiv, jini kakoni maya bodha hom, naiva krishna kripai, jagat hoite parimukta hoyache, tini I mukta jiv evam tanghar dashai, mukta dasha, krishna bohirmuk, Hoya, anadi mayar kabale jini bodhiya achin, tini bodha jiv evam tanghar dashai samsara dosha. Two states of the jiva are clearly perceivable, the liberated state and the state of bondage to material existence. A jiva who is a pure devotee of Krishna, who either never becomes bound by maya, or who by Krishna's mercy has gained freedom from bondage to maya, is in the liberated state. A jiva who has become inimical to Krishna and has then fallen into the grasp of maya, since time immemorial, is in the state of bondage to material existence. Notice how he deals with this anadi bandha, supposedly beginningless, bondage. But the way he's describing it here, and this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his authoritative book, Jiva Dharma, the beginningless process, he's describing the beginning of it. First the living entity becomes inimical to Krishna, then maya catches him. And then the beginningless begins. So that beginningless is better translated as since time immemorial. It has a beginning, but we can't remember it. It's too far back. All right. With that, any comments?
Yes, sir.
I believe that I heard many times how Prabhupada describes jiva as Anandamaya, and he, Srila Prabhupada. Now, from this purport, I understand that actually the Anandamaya refers only to the Supreme Lord.
Normally. You can also, of course, not as originally intended in the explanation of the Taittiriya Upanishad. It's not talking about the jiva. That's distinguished in the Vedanta Sutra, that it's actually the Anandamaya is the Paramatma. But the jiva also is, in another sense, also anandamaya. Of course, he's pleasure-seeking by nature. That's correct, but it doesn't exactly match the description of the Taittiriya Upanishad.
Okay, so it's kind of...
another interpretation. But not based on...
not based on this.
It's just using the same term, but in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Is this Bengali word, like it says, Krishna Bahimukha Haya, is Haya like Bhutva in Sanskrit?
Is it what?
Is the word Bengali word Haya, is it like Bhutva in Sanskrit, like having become...
Yeah, it is a participle. I'm not sure about the how you categorize Bengali participles. I can't remember. I never studied it clearly. There are different kinds of participles in Bengali. It's a kind of gerund.
It's like, okay, having
yeah, it's equivalent of an undeclined participle, yes.
Oh, okay.
It's undeclined also.
Right.
Yeah. Which means one thing happens and another thing.
Yes, it's pretty clear there. Yeah.
Yeah. Something before the main action.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else? Yes. Yeah.
Sorry. In Dari 2.3, it said that from the words being bewildered, we understand that although Maya herself knows that her duty of bewildering the jivas is not pleasing to the Supreme Lord, she cannot tolerate the jivas' indifference to the Lord. They are ignoring him since time immemorial. So, her duty is not pleasing to the Lord,
Well, does the Lord get pleasure out of the jiva's becoming bewildered and suffering? Does he get pleasure out of the jiva's suffering? Is he sadist?
But they became inimical towards him, so they had to learn the lesson in order to again...
There's a level on which he's not pleased. He doesn't like to have it done. But on a higher level, he's pleased by everything. He's always happy. From the higher point of view, this is for the jiva's correction. It's sad that it has to be done, but in a broader sense, it's the best thing for them. So the Lord's happy with it in the broader sense. But there's a level in which he wishes it didn't have to be like that. Okay, so we can understand this relatively from one point of view, he's not happy with it. Yes.
Small thing. I noticed in many computer files here it says from the words being bewildered, but I think you read out from the words feeling ashamed.
I think I corrected this, that's why. Because
yeah.
From the words feeling bewildered is wrong.
Yeah, right.
But we fixed it. It's really feeling ashamed.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because it was corrected later on. And now it says feeling ashamed, which is Vilajamana. Yeah. Yeah. There was a mistake. It was caught by somebody. It was caught by Pradyumna Prabhu, who looked over the manuscript and he caught it. And I fixed it. Yes, Prabhu.
You read something about Shankaracharya and said his philosophy that, in the end, there's no duality between. In the end, the duality disappears between knower and the known and all that. Is that ultimately what he taught, or did he actually teach, because Prabhupada would quote him saying, Narayana Pravyaktat, like that?
No, that's what he taught. He taught hardcore Mayavad. He's the source of all the hardcore Mayavad, which is nonsense philosophy. The Vaishnavacharyas take great pleasure in tearing it apart in so many ways because it's faulty. He taught it because Krishna ordered him to teach it. The Narayana Pravyaktat is just a side statement. And in fact, all it says, literally, is Narayana is superior to the pradhana, the total material energy. It just means he's a higher illusion than the material energy. Higher than the material energy is God, but God's also illusion. He's just the highest illusion. When the absolute truth, not just part of it, but the whole absolute truth, is covered by the pure mode of goodness, not mixed with the other two modes, the result is Bhagavan, Ishvara. But that's illusion. It's just the best illusion. So you can interpret Narayana Pravyaktat just that Narayana's a better illusion than Maya.
Is there anywhere in his books where he gives pure Vaishnava Siddhanta?
He shows his devotion to Krishna in places. That's already been discussed here. Then some of his stotras, his songs, where he's not, he can put the philosophy aside and just express his feelings. He expresses devotion to Govinda, and he tells his disciples, Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda. Yeah. Your grammar will not save you at the time of death. Okay? Better to go to Bhavatam class if you have to choose between Bhavatam class and Bhavatam and grammar class. Bhavatam will save you. That's Shankaracharya telling us. He's expressing sometimes his devotion when he gets a chance to, but whenever he's officially speaking philosophy, he has to speak nonsense. Yes. Yes.
Jagannathastakam, I heard, was written by him that we sing.
Some say it was written by Lord Chaitanya. It came out of the mouth of Lord Chaitanya. And then some say, right?
Mm-hmm. So what is?
I think we don't know for sure who really wrote it.
Okay.
Some say Lord Chaitanya wrote it, or not wrote it, but spoke it. And then someone else says that the Shankaracharya wrote it. I don't know. Okay. Same Jagannath Ashram? Okay. That means we don't really know then who wrote it. Why do we accept it? Because who sings it? I don't know. I don't know why we accept it. It's given to us. I just don't know the history of it. Yes.
Also, a question about Maya, like a continuation of Vishnugat Prabhu's question. She's a Krishna servant, and she's doing it as a service to Krishna in order to help those jivas who are living in this material world to go back to Krishna. So why her service is not pleasing to Krishna? Because she does it as a service to him.
Not that she's doing it, that he's mad at her that she's doing this. She's just doing what he wants her to do. He's not happy it has to be done. It's unfortunate living in these have to be punished, have to suffer. That doesn't please Krishna. But better they suffer under the care of Maya, and she directs them properly, rather than send them into total chaos, suffer forever, and never be corrected. He puts them under the care of Maya so they can be gradually corrected. So he doesn't like that has to be done. He doesn't like that. But better it's in her hands. So she's satisfying him, but he's not happy that this suffering business has to go on. Why does it have to go on? Because of our foolishness. It's our fault we have to suffer. And Krishna's not happy about it. That's what he's not happy about. That we're so stupid that we insist on suffering.
So Krishna's not happy.
Maya is just doing the job that has to be done. She's doing nothing wrong.
So does it mean that Krishna is not happy of suffering of living entity, but
basically that's what it really means.
Yeah,
she's the one giving them the suffering, he's unhappy it has to be done. He's pleased with her. Thank you, Maya, for giving them the suffering because it has to be done and you're the best one to do it. But he's still unhappy it has to be done. He's unhappy about the suffering has to be given out, but he's not unhappy that she's doing it. Rather she does it than it just happens chaotically. Just throw all the jivas into a whirlpool of suffering with no rhyme or reason. Just causeless suffering forever. That's no good. Better to have a law of karma by which living entities can learn their lesson and come back to him. That's arranged by Maya.
But
Maya has two sides, avidya and vidya. So the vidya side of Maya leads the living entities back to Krishna.
But at the same time, we can see from the perspective of Maya that she understands that it has to be done and Krishna wants this living entity to be rectified. So, and because Krishna wants it, she does it as his service. So
yes.
he must be pleased by her.
Yes. He doesn't like the service. It doesn't mean he doesn't like her. He's pleased with her. He just doesn't like this punishing business. He doesn't like it. But he's pleased that she's doing it. Just like the king may not like fighting wars, but it has to be done. And better that the army is in good hands and the enemy is defeated, even though the king hates to fight a war, but when he fights the war, he does it properly. And,
so,
he's pleased with the general who did the duty.
So, in this connection, excuse me for speaking like this.
Yes.
Maya, she understands that she's doing the service for Krishna, so and she might be even be proud that she's able to serve Krishna in some particular way, even though the service is is giving so many sufferings to living entities. But anyway, why she is Vilajimana, why she is ashamed by her service? Because it's just her job.
She's ashamed not to do her duty. She's ashamed to stand right in front of Krishna. She does all this punishing behind the scenes. Keeping it away from Krishna. He doesn't want to see the blood and guts. She does it so he doesn't have to see it. That's why she's ashamed to stand in front. She's not ashamed to do her duty, but she's ashamed to do it right in front of Krishna.
And as soon as Krishna appears, and as soon as living entities turn to Krishna, she stops her duty and she just helps them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen very often. She's got a lot more jivas to punish, and only few of them, once in a while, a few of them graduate from that. Most of them stay in there for a long time.
Thank you.
Yes.
Can this example be appropriate that just as Prabhupada was writing in a purport previously when we were looking in the... actually, I think of these verses. One of these verses, how just as a man who's caring for his children might put him in the care of a severe man so that he can discipline his children.
Yes.
I read that in the purport.
Yes.
So if we take that example, then that severe man who's taking the charge of disciplining the child, he might not just like be in front of the parents and like show everything that he's like,
yeah,
disciplined.
Don't show him, just do it and get it over with. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like he feel ashamed to, like maybe he would feel ashamed like to correct all these things before the parents, but he would do it. Like it's not something he would do in front of the parents that the parents they don't like to see.
Yes.
That makes yeah.
So. Just like that. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes. Also, I have a question after that.
In this regard, there is an instance in Navadvipa Mahatmya in the Parikrama Kanda where Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains this kind of story when Maya gets frustrated and she asks Lord Shiva what to do, and he sends her to a place in one of the dvipas in Navadvip and says, you go and meditate on Lord Gauranga. There she goes and does meditation for a long time. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears with his associates and then she tells him that bewildering the jivas here and I'm putting them into so many different miseries with my trident which represent the three kleshas and all that. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that you're doing a very important thing. You are existing as Yogamaya in the spiritual world and conducting the spiritual activities. And he glorifies him. He glorifies her. And then she takes the dust of the lotus feet of Gauranga Mahaprabhu and keeps in her Simanta, so that place becomes a Simanta Dweep. So there's something related to that.
Yes.
My question is that in the paragraph, in the commentary beginning with Sri Baladeva Vidyabhushan points out how the description of Vyasadeva trance.
Yes.
He makes a point that prior to becoming deluded, the jivas existed as separate entities. There is a line beginning like this.
Yes.
So he says that prior to becoming deluded, that is before they fell down, they existed as separate entities.
Yes.
And they will continue to exist separately even after liberation. So in this whole description, he doesn't see. I mean, if he had given very explicit detail of that prior to becoming deluded, the jivas existed as separate entities in the spiritual world, then it would have become even more much clearer. Like he doesn't state where. This says that.
Sorry, he doesn't. He doesn't. I couldn't fake it and put some words in his mouth. He doesn't say it.
But can we get more down-to-earth pramana for this particular point? That where?
No, I don't know. I thought I saw once an actual statement in the Jiva Dharma that living entities were in Vaikuntha, and then they fell down. But then when I went back to look for it, I couldn't find it. And maybe it was just a dream I had one night. I mean, you know. Because I can't find the statement. I've been looking for it. Yes?
Pramana we have from any of our other acharyas?
If we did, then this argument would be finished. But no. Anyway, probable explanation for that is that the actual fall down of the jiva is outside the scope of material time and space. Where we were before is not before or where in any material sense, in any sense that we can understand with our words and our logic and our material minds. Therefore, nobody's explaining it to us because we can't understand it. It's outside the scope of material time, space, logic, And that's all we know how to deal with, material time, space, and logic. We ask where and we ask when, but those are the questions of material time and space. Therefore, even the greatest acharyas can't explain it to us because we're incapable of understanding it in our present consciousness. Yes.
Yeah, just to, I think that was exactly the argument of people who were the people who were promoting that we never fell down. They also they kind of told that that's why Srila Prabhupada offered an explanation just to satisfy the minds of his followers. Because the actual explanation can't be given. Like,
we can say that's why Prabhupada said simply we were with Krishna, because that's the fact. How we were and how we can't fall down, what we did fall down, this is the problem. Nobody's supposed to fall down from Vaikuntha, but it looks like everybody did. So that apparent contradiction is a problem. But Prabhupada just said anyway, we were with Krishna. And we're going back to Godhead, back somewhere we were before. That's what he is telling us. And to say that Prabhupada telling us that is a deceptive way to keep us from getting upset means that Prabhupada's lying to us. And that, you know, the heading on his flagship magazine is a lie. Back to Godhead. No, you're not going back to Godhead. You never were there. You know, that means the whole thing's a lie. That's a little complicated and also troublesome. Why is Prabhupada lying? I'd rather avoid that and just have to deal with the apparent contradiction that nobody falls down, but we fell down. That's easier to deal with than how to explain why Prabhupada's lying.
And yeah, I wanted to ask one more thing.
Yeah.
That in 32.2 it said, Tena muhyanti jantavaha.
Yes.
So this jantavaha is in plural. Can this be offered as an argument against Mayavadis? Because, you know, it kind of presumes that there were many and then many were bewildered.
Okay, but they accept the Bhagavad Gita. Prasthana Traya includes the Gita as authority. They don't deny the authority of the Bhagavatam. So they have to give their own explanation of that same statement. And they would say that, no, the jivas don't exist separately, especially plural jivas. You know, many jivas don't exist separately before the illusion. First the illusion. Yeah. First the imposition of maya, then the plurality. Yeah. So it's like, by the power of maya, we have a subsequent situation in which we have an appearance of plurality and all the plurals are suffering. But that comes after the, you know, in their interpretation, it comes after, and that's okay. I mean, you know, that could be a way, theoretically, grammatically, of construing the statement.
But then it contradicts.
Because of that,
something
happens. The result usually happens after the cause. That's fine.
Then it contradicts.
The result's not supposed to be before the cause, after the cause.
Then it contradicts this statement because, like.
Which one?
Because logically, you understand that he says jivas were bewildered by the agyana.
Well, no, see,
so it means there were
our statement is that first the jiva rebelled, then he was bewildered, then you know. But they're saying that the jiva, there is no jiva until the bewilderment.
Yeah,
the Mayavadis say bewilderment is what creates the jivas. Before the bewilderment, there are no jivas. We say there were jivas. We say there were jivas before, and they got bewildered. They say the jivas come into existence by bewilderment.
Yeah. But doesn't this statement
they're contradictory.
Actually,
yeah, we're disagreeing with them.
That's what I want to say. Doesn't this statement actually challenges them?
Oh, yes. That is being presented right in their face as a direct challenge.
Because I think it also somewhere in the fourth chapter, Puta, what's it? 4.10.
Yes.
Vitaraga bhaya krodha manmaya mamupashitaha.
Well, that's the conditioned souls becoming liberated. So conditioned souls are plural. Mayavadis agree. Conditioned souls are plural, but they're an illusion. And they become regain their reality, their real consciousness that there is no plurality.
Because I think one of the acharyas offered that argument because was a vita raga bhaya krodha means it's liberated state of the jiva, and it's still mentioned in
the
plural.
Okay, but the Mayavadis could get away with interpreting that before they're plural, before they become liberated, they're plural. After liberation, no plurality, but before the liberation, in the process of giving up their delusion, they're still plural. So they could interpret it like that. And I'm sure they use all their brains to weasel their way through that. Okay. Let's stop for now and continue. Okay, one more. Please.
About time and space and anadi movement, anadi. So, Jagannath Pandita in his Premavarta, he explains a little bit similar things about how Radha and Krishna, they were alone, then they separated into two, Radha and Krishna, then again they became Sachitanya Mahaprabhu, and he explains that we experience these stages or these processes in the course of time, but actually we cannot understand it's all those stages are existing simultaneously.
Yes.
So we cannot tell that it was just Radha and Krishna, then appeared Lord Chaitanya. No, both of them exist simultaneously. So, and also in the statement, I remember you explained that it was only one Supreme Lord, and then appeared so many living entities. Also, we cannot interpret it in the course of time that it was already existing. And Krishna and all living entities, we can perceive it in the matter of time, but actually it's not so. So maybe in the same perspective.
Well, okay, but that description, I think in Chaitanya Upanishad, can be taken, and probably mostly often is taken, by the Vaishnava Acharyas as describing the periodic creation. The Lord sitting with everything inside his abdomen during the annihilation, it's time to wake everything up. And he thinks, let me become many. That's not describing the original creation of the jivas, but just the re-manifestation at the beginning of a new cycle. So that is the usual interpretation of that passage and similar passages. It's describing the reawakening of the creation at the end of the annihilation.
So we cannot tell that there are any explanation that it was only one Supreme Lord and then he became many living entities.
The thing is, if you have a particular thought, let me become many, it's hard to say that he's always thinking that. You know, he's got other things to think about.
Yeah.
Besides just thinking about that all the time. So it's the thought is not an eternal activity. It's a one-time thought. So it must have happened at some time.
So anyway, those are certain examples how this transcendental activity is going on the realm of achintya. So at the same time, I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains that this question of fall down of jiva is one of the achintya. It comes into the category of achintya.
Yes.
And therefore, we cannot understand that completely.
Yeah, so just like the jivas, what the jivas were doing before they fell is like asking what Krishna and Radharani are doing now. And that's beyond material time, space, and understanding. You can't, no sense in asking when and where and how, because it's beyond our understanding. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, we'll stop for now. Thank you, all glory to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jaya.